Greetings, everyone. Welcome to House Mountain Views and to the Boone series. Boone is an East Tennessee teenager on his own at 16 and facing long odds. His daddy taught him rage and not to trust anybody. His mother taught him to keep his head down and hope nobody notices him. Now they're both gone, and what he knows about making it as an adult is next to nothing. He's basically a decent kid, but he's carrying around so much anger and insecurity that sometimes it's hard for him to do the right thing, even when he can figure out what that is. Pushing Back, Matching Scars, and Keeping Secrets, the three books in the series so far, are all written from Boone's point of view. My name is Jim Hartzell, and I hope you enjoy getting to know Boone as much as I have. Thanks for joining us. Pushing Back, Book 1 in the Boone series, by Jim Hartzell. Chapter 27. I wake up the next day and make a cup of coffee, grab a handful of cereal out of the box, and go into the living room. Sitting on the couch, I think about the last few weeks. Now, I've been shot at and wounded by a friend of mine. Somebody tried to break into my house. My mama has evidently run off with some guy named Jake. I finally got to kiss a girl, and she got up and ran out of the house. My friend, the one who shot me, is in the hospital and may or may not get out. And I can't remember anything else, but I'm sure there's something I'm leaving out. Frankie comes up and puts her head on the couch right next to me. I reach over and give her ears a scratch, and the phone rings. It's Carrie. "Boone, you better get down here," she says. "What's going on?" I can't tell from her voice why I need to get down there. "Just get here when you can. Sooner is better," she says, and hangs up the phone. I pull on some clothes and give Frankie some food, jump in the truck, and head out. By the time I get there, I've made up all kinds of stories about what's going on, none of them good. Carrie's in the lobby and gets up when she sees me come in. "Come with me." "What's going on, Carrie?" "We're not heading toward ICU." I remember it was to the right of the big front desk, and we're going straight ahead. "So where are we going?" She doesn't answer, just keeps walking, and turns into a doorway. I follow her into what looks like a little church. Jerry's there, and a woman, and other than that, the room is empty. It's very quiet in here. I look from one person to the other, and my bad feelings get worse and worse. "Let's sit down over here," the woman says. "Y'all need to tell me what the hell's going on here," I say, trying hard not to shout. Jerry starts to say something, and Carrie shushes him. "Boone, we need to talk to this woman, and I wanted you to be here. Jerry doesn't agree. Papa's family, and I know he thinks of you that way, too. So here you are. Just come over here. Please." I don't look at Jerry. I'd be fine with not ever seeing that asshole again, but I kind of like Carrie, and this sounds like a big deal. We go to the front of the chapel and sit on the first couple of pews. It's been forever since I've been in church. Last time I remember being in church was when I was 9 or so, and Hannah was just born. Mama still took us. Daddy never darkened the door of any church. He used to say preachers were money-grubbing liars. I could always take it or leave it. Never seemed like he was talking to me anyway. Talking about me, maybe. Maybe that's what got Daddy so mad about the whole church thing. Maybe he felt like the preacher was talking about him all the time. And sometimes it sure sounded like it.
We used to get home from church, and Daddy would start in on Mama. Well, what'd the liar talk about this time? How much of my money did you give that son of a bitch? Did you leave enough for us to eat and put gas in the truck? I got to get to work, you know that, right? He'd go on and on until Mama finally said something back to him, and then he'd go after her. Sundays were bad at our house. So I don't have a good feeling about the room I'm in, and I don't like Jerry being in there. And Carrie looks real worried. And this woman's got that look on her face like she's going to tell us something we don't want to hear, but she thinks we need to. Jerry says, "Let's hear it. You got us all here now." He looks at me like I'm to blame for whatever news we're about to get. I want to get up and go over, whisper in his ear, remind him of what happened the last time he took me on. But the woman starts talking and he shuts up. "Mr. Everett is a very sick man," she says quietly. Beside me, Carrie stiffens and draws in her breath. "What's wrong with him?" she asks, just as quiet. "He's had a minor stroke." And I don't hear anything after that. I manage to stay upright, but that's about all I can do. That's why he didn't make any sense when he tried to talk out there in the backyard. That's why he couldn't get up. I understand now, and it scares the hell out of me. I realize that I don't have anybody else, anybody at all. The woman is still talking, and I try to start listening to her again. "And of course, he'll need round-the-clock care while we see what kind of progress he can make." Carrie looks at Jerry, and they both look at me. "Oh, no, I think there's no way I can do that. I can't take care of an old man, feed him, dress him, wipe his ass. No way at all." They look at each other, and then Carrie motions for me to follow her out into the hallway. "Listen, Boone, we need a big favor from you," she says, and I get ready to say no before it can go any farther. Then she says, "Pop is coming home with us, of course, and we'll keep him as long as it takes. I know it's a lot to ask to have you take care of the place for us, you know, keep it up and all. I hate to ask, and Jerry, well, Jerry doesn't like you very much. He thinks this is a bad idea, but he doesn't have any other ideas. So as soon as the doctors say we can move him, we're getting him out of here." She stops and looks at me like I'm supposed to say something. I just stare at her. She gets my look all wrong and says, Of course, we'll pay you to watch the place. It won't be much, I'm afraid." My brain finally catches up, and I start to say I won't accept any money, that Gamaliel's like family to me, too, but I don't say that. I say, "Well, there'll be electricity to pay for and stuff like that." "Then you'll do it? Oh, Boone, that's great. We could count on you. And we'll pay you. We'll insist on that." I think about when I tried to pay Gamaliel for cashing in that ticket. He told me I was being insulting. I didn't understand that then, and I don't understand it now. I don't feel insulted at all. "Whatever you think's right, Carrie," is what I say to her. She nods. "It's settled then." She and I go back in. She gives Jerry a nod, and he rolls his eyes. And I think about giving him a smile or a wink, but decide not to. "When can I see him?" I ask the woman, who's standing there with Jerry. "Not for a day or so," she says. I turn to Carrie. "Give me a call, would you, when I can see him? I don't remember where y'all live, and I want to see him before you move him out of here." She nods. "Of course." "I'm going to go now," I say to her. "Don't bother with Jerry. I just want to get out of this room and out of this hospital. I don't like hospitals." When I get home, I sit on the couch and try not to think the stuff I'm thinking. Why didn't I make Gamaliel go to the doctor after those guys attacked the house? What if something that happened then made this happen? Is this my fault? What if the old guy dies? I get up and start walking around trying to get a handle on this. I'm feeling really guilty. After a few minutes, I'm tired of it. Say to myself, The old guy told you not to call anybody. You were just doing what he said. He's got a right to decide that shit for himself. Besides, what were you supposed to do? Drag him to the truck and tie him in? You were shot, remember? And he's the one that shot you. Don't forget that. You probably saved his life. You're the one that found him on the ground, got him to the hospital. Damn straight you saved him. Don't forget that either. I wonder how much Carrie's going to pay me. That should be easy money, just looking in on the house every now and then. I'll need to go through it, make sure there's nothing valuable in the house, just in case somebody breaks in while I'm not up there. Frankie comes over and looks at me. She's been watching me pace around, and now that I'm still, she comes up and sits in front of me. Just sits there, looking up at me, until I remember she hasn't been fed, and she's probably out of water. When I head to the kitchen, she's right behind me. And sure enough, she's out of food and almost out of water. After I take care of her, I take her outside and let her run. She's getting bigger and bigger, close to 4 months old now. Not a run anymore, and I'm thinking I need to do some training. But I don't have the slightest idea how to do that.
I hope you enjoyed this installment of the Boone series. The background music you hear is The Wind That Shakes the Barley, played on a Masterworks hammer dulcimer. If you can't wait to find out what happens next, or you want a copy for yourself, the Boone series and all my other books are available on my website, housemountainviews.com. I also encourage you to support any independent bookstores in your area. Stop by and ask for the title you're interested in. If they don't have it, they can probably order it for you. Thanks for spending your time here at House Mountain Views. Y'all take care of yourselves and stay in touch.